Elizabeth Barrett as a wife, mother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Hello, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Hank. Nice to see you today.
Great to be back.
It's a beautiful day outside, and it's in keeping with the summer spirit to have all the nice, beautiful blue skies, a little warmer, kind of enticing us to strip off a few layers of clothing and get out and enjoy the sunshine or our day-to-day. And for a lot of people, the sunshine is something that they dread, having to strip off a couple layers and get out into the sunshine, whether it's for health reasons or personal reasons or anxiety associated with that. Many of us struggle with this time of the year because of those expectations of that tanned summer look that we're supposed to be trying to achieve, while, of course, not getting skin cancer and, you know, not ruining our hair and getting the right amount of exercise. I mean, there are those mixed messages that we receive constantly. And at this time of year, it seems we get those mixed messages at a much greater rate because of the expectations of what it's supposed to be to appreciate, who we're supposed to be to appreciate summer. So what inspired the show this week? There was a few things, but the thing that really made me want to talk about body image and expectations and self-esteem and what it feels like to have a part of us that we don't want to show to the rest of the world was my experiences going up to camp. Because I think I've told you that my daughter Kelly is a counselor up at Camp Natoma, which is a local camp in the area. And the beautiful thing about this camp is that it's off the grid. There's no cell phone coverage. There's no screens. The kids sleep outside under the stars, and there are no mirrors virtually anywhere at the camp. You're just kind of there hanging out. And the beauty of this is hanging out at the pool. They have a beautiful big pool there, and the kids swim a couple times a day. And seeing these kids from ages 7 to, you know, the counselors are in their 20s, college students, just enjoying life at the pool, just hanging out, having a great time, all sorts of different body shapes and sizes, and a whole group of teenagers, you know, dealing with skin issues and changes in their bodies. Everyone's in bathing suits, having a great time. There were a couple kids, you know, sitting by the slide, not really getting in the water, but they still were engaging and talking to each other and hanging out. And I just couldn't help but thinking that there has to be a great freedom in not being around mirrors, in not being around the media, in not being around anyone else but those who are also just at camp having a great time, right? That you're surrounded by a group of kids and people who are just having a great time. And that the counselors themselves are, you know, wearing their bathing suits proudly and having a great time and playing games with the kids and in the water and splashing and having fun. What an incredible role model for the younger kids and for the teenage girls to see these college age students, men and women, you know, having a great time, just enjoying life, enjoying the fresh air, enjoying being outside. And it made my heart hurt for all of the young people or anyone who is avoiding some of these simple pleasures in life, which is just being in your body, being in the water, being outside and playing, people are missing those pure joys because there is some social message that they've taken in that says, I am not okay, that I do not deserve to be out in public, that I need to hide myself because for whatever reason, I am not for public consumption. I cannot be seen. And that breaks my heart because I know that this is such a large societal issue that we in the social sciences have a name for it. We call it normative discontent. That it's become such a social norm to have self-loathing, to feel poorly about ourselves, to feel badly about our body. It's become such a common occurrence that it's no longer considered strange or off. That so many people feel this way that it's considered the norm, that you're almost not normal if you feel good about your body size, if you feel good about how you look, if you feel good about yourself in a suit. That almost is now considered abnormal. Who are these people that enjoy putting on a bikini and going out to the beach? The normative discontent is so prevalent that we have an entire society that is in a state of panic almost 24/7, thinking about having to be out in public because of the social messages. So I thought, all right, let's talk about this. What are these secret things that we try to hide about ourselves? What are the things that you're missing out on in your day-to-day life because you feel like you can't be seen, either in a bathing suit or because your skin has acne or because you feel your nose is off? What is that secret thing? I think we need to talk about it. I think we all carry this discontent on some level. And if we talked about it and recognized that all of us have something we'd like to have a little different, that it might free us up to enjoy our life a little more. I don't know. So, Hank, is there something you avoid? Are there things you avoid doing?
Oh, absolutely. And it's just what you talked about. It's the bathing suit. You know, it's the going out in public without, you know, not being fully covered. And, you know, In general, I have a pretty high self-esteem about my positive attributes, but physical beauty is not one of them. And I think over the years, I've just kind of steered away from things where you display yourself and, you know, concentrate on the things where that's not an issue, you know.
So you've actually done the positive, right? You've found the things about yourself that are great and enjoyed those activities. But do you just don't think about going to pools or to the beach, or do you miss it on any level?
I think I miss it at some level. I mean, I'll go to the pool, but it'll be, you know, we have a community pool, and I'll do it at Tuesday nights at 9 o'clock when I know that nobody else is going to be there. If nobody's looking at me, I have a great time. But, and what you said about the camp, I think, you know, even as like a 12-year-old, I was always chubby, but it didn't matter. There was a certain point where I started wearing a T-shirt and where I started, you know, avoiding being seen in public. And I can't pinpoint when, but there's definitely a time when I just didn't care, and a time when I cared deeply.
And do you think it was pressure from other kids, or do you think it was something that you just absorbed culturally, or was it a message from your...
I think it was probably started by somebody made a comment or made fun of me or something, and that just kind of stuck and, you know, intensified over the years. So, yeah, I don't think it's the media or anything. I mean, there's always going to be beautiful people on TV, and, you know, I think most people realize they're not going to be one of them.
But I don't know if they do, because there is such a message from the media and culture that anyone can achieve these desired results if they just try hard enough. And I think that's the thing that's so damaging, is that we are being taught that our failings, or those, right, those things that we think about ourselves that are not perfect, are just our own fault, that we somehow have a weakness if we carry extra weight, or if our skin has acne, or, you know, even if our hair isn't perfect, that somehow we are not trying hard enough. And that cultural message, that media message, that's what drives this normative discontent. That if you hear this enough, that you just are, you know, one push-up away from perfection, then you feel badly about yourself and start avoiding those places where people will judge you for being one push-up away from perfection. And this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we gather every Tuesday at the same time to talk about these issues in our lives. Because having a community conversation helps to bring us out of the secrecy and the dark that oftentimes can make us sick, right? It's those things we don't talk about. It's those things that we hide. It's those things that we feel ashamed about that tend to drag us down, that tend to lead to anxiety and depression, sense of alienation, loneliness. We start to self-censor our lives because we start to hold secrets and believe that no one else could relate to how we're feeling, that the way we feel about ourselves is so unique and strange and off that if anyone knew this, they would no longer want to love us or be with us or spend time with us. And so it's the weight of these secrets that weigh us down, literally and figuratively. So that's why today I want to blow the doors off the world of cultural expectations when it comes to beauty and attraction. And I invite your input on this conversation. 805-781-3875 is the number to get in. You can bring up anything that has to do with body image, body esteem, self-esteem, summer pressures, the beauty industry. We're going to try to cover a little bit of all of it. But I'm curious to know what comes up for you when you think about summer activities and summer clothing and summer beauty, what do you avoid because of something you dislike about yourself? What are some activities that you just don't do because you don't want to be judged or seen in a certain way? 805-781-3875. You can also be part of the conversation on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, our website, thereluctanttherapist.com, and always previous shows are available at kcbx.org. And I've had this Twitter account for a while, but we're just starting to get active with it. So if you do tweet, the Twitter account is EBTRT. EBTRT, at EBTRT. That'd be Elizabeth Barrett, the Reluctant Therapist. All right. So the first inspiration for the show was going up to camp and just being surrounded by all of the energy and beauty of the kids. I loved it. It was so much fun to be around, and it just reminded me of that freedom of just being in the world. The other thing I was thinking about is, you know, we talked last week about the tenet of mental health that has to do with service to others. Then we've talked about the importance of deep, meaningful relationships. And we've talked about meaningful work. And we've, you know, spent some time talking about good health. But we don't spend a lot of time, we haven't spent a lot of time talking about the importance of a strong sense of self. The importance of knowing our worth, of having a sense of positivity, of being proud of who we are and what we've accomplished, how we feel about ourselves and how we look. And it's a tough conversation because there's this dance that goes on between not wanting to give in to the cultural expectations for what it is to be beautiful, but also our biological and genetic desire to be attractive, to be connected to others, to feel desired, to be in relationship. And so this dance is difficult because there are a few things that we need to do to put ourselves in a situation to be in relationship. Attraction is a piece of long-term enduring relationships. When they do studies of long-term married couples, the level of attraction that the couple still have for each other is an indicator of the satisfaction that each person receives in the relationship. The happier the couple is with how they feel about themselves and how attracted they are to their partner, the happier and more satisfying the relationship is. And I think it's something we hate to talk about because I think on some level we fear that we aren't ever going to be attractive enough to bring about a desired relationship. Or our fear is that we will stop being attractive and that our spouse or our partner or our friends will not want to be with us any longer. I mean, there's a huge fear factor in this whole conversation about beauty and attraction. And then there is the whole conversation of the beauty industry and the diet industry are very unhealthy places to get involved with. And so how do I maximize my own assets without falling prey to the messages from society that I need to do more? What is your attraction set point? What is your beauty set point is one way of looking at it. Like, how do you maximize those assets that you have? And then minimize those things that you don't feel are your best assets and not fall prey to trying to do more, to trying to change yourself physically or in some way. And the thing that's interesting is, as I think on some level, we believe that this desire for beauty or perfection or to be attractive is a modern ailment, right? It's something that we've only experienced in this modern era. But truthfully, this desire to improve our level of attraction has been around since civilized society. In the medieval times, women were cooking up potions in their kitchen for different scents and fragrances, but also different cosmetics, different things, herbs and flowers were used for putting on lips or, you know, fleshing the face. And so not just cosmetics, but also there was efforts to change the body shapes of women at certain times in history to be more attractive. Women were having a rib removed in the let's say the 1800s, so that they could fit into the, you know, corset squeezing outfits that were popular of the day. There's all sorts of different ways that women, and the thing that's changed is that we're talking a lot about women and beauty and attraction that was kind of the focus for years and years. What has changed is that we see now that men feel equally as uncomfortable and anxious about their looks and their beauty and attraction. That's one of the bonuses of the modern era, is that the advertising industry has figured out how to also make men feel as normatively discontent with themselves as women have felt for years and years and years. Women were squeezing into metal and bone corsets in the 16th century. In the 19th century, women were, again, corseted, I guess would be the right word to use. I mean, whatever the cultural level of beauty is, or decision of what is beautiful at the time, kind of has pushed women through to doing different things to their body. And just to show you how common this push for being appealing has been, Darwin even noticed when he was doing his evolutionary work and his scientific work. And he noted that women, in their cultural pursuit of beauty, are feeling this universal passion for adornment that includes wonderfully great suffering. So the idea of suffering for beauty or trying to fit in isn't new. But what's changed, what really changed, was in the early 1900s. In 1910, there were two women, surprisingly, or maybe sadly, two women who were able to capitalize on mass production and mass marketing. And this were Elizabeth Arden and Helena Rubinstein. Elizabeth Arden had the first salon, actually, in New York. And she started producing mass quantities of cosmetics. And with the other thing that's interesting is that Helena Rubinstein and Elizabeth Arden were also coming at beauty from kind of a holistic approach. They were the first ones to connect facials and diet and exercise and cosmetics together, kind of this holistic view of beauty, which is now very popular again. But they also were very savvy businesswomen, and they were able to utilize this growing advertising industry in the early 1900s to spread the message of their beauty products. And so women started abandoning their kitchen recipes for cosmetics and started buying into these mass-produced beauty items, everything for fragrance and hair care and skin care and makeup. And so from this little start at the turn of the century, we've seen the beauty industry alone grow to $160 billion a year industry. $160 billion a year in revenue. Because women are quick to buy whatever is the newest thing, promising beauty and attraction. And it is said that women spend an average of $215 a year just on cosmetics alone. So this growth in the beauty industry, this growth in advertising beauty products, and it was pushed a lot by celebrity endorsers. You know, you see celebrities pushing fragrances and cosmetics and skincare products and, you know, all of this magic of... Oh, the other thing that was interesting is Helena Rubinstein worked with this new field of psychology and all the research that was being done on the human brain and motivation, and utilized this new research on psychology to help sell women this idea that they needed to do something to be more beautiful. So from this early days of the beauty industry, and then the growing diet industry, which also capitalized on the obsession for women to be a certain size. You know, at one point you had to be curvy, and then there was the straight lines of looking like a flapper with their straight kind of boyish body. And then it went back to the curvy look of Jane Mansfield. And then we went back to the twiggy version. I mean, this up and down of what is the perfect body size drove the diet industry, which also is a huge moneymaker, $20 billion a year. At any one time, 108 million people are on a diet of some sort. So these two industries got so large that we forgot at some point that they were just industries and not really the harbingers of what is beauty in our culture. So that's on my mind. The other part is my sadness that this normative discontent is normal, that our young women in teens and early 20s are driven so much by self-loathing that's driven by fashion magazines, by the media. We look at what they're seeing on television, right? These unrealistic beauty standards. But the thing that drives normative discontent the most, the thing that makes me saddest, is that the thing that makes young women most concerned about how they look is the message they receive from their mothers. And I don't want to do mom bashing about this, but that's where the study goes, is that how mothers feel about themselves, their bodies, how they treat themselves, you know, if they're dieting or self-loathing or, you know, hiding food in the back of the house or going, you know, having plastic surgery done. These models, these mothers that are modeling this self-loathing are passing these traits on to their children. And that's the more difficult thing to address, because we can do classes and talk about advertising and how it's, you know, just snake oil and that the cosmetics are not really doing anything for you. And we can talk to our children about the fact that, you know, a lot of the skincare products you use actually make your skin worse, that the cosmetics you're using actually make your skin worse, and that you end up having to buy more products to heal the damage. We can talk about these things, but what we can't address easily is the influence that moms have on their daughters and their sons when it comes to self-love and what is beauty. So what do you think about this? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of this conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Am I the only one who worries about these things? Am I the only one who has a few things that I wish I could change and make better about myself? And how do we do this dance? How do we find this balance of utilizing our assets, right? Dressing in a way that kind of shows off what we have and not feeling like we constantly need to be changing or cutting our bodies or utilizing more cosmetics in order to fit in or feel accepted. I don't know. I think it's a huge issue. And I'm curious to know what it is you avoid. What aren't you doing this summer? What aren't you allowing yourself to enjoy because you feel like you really shouldn't be outside, that you really can't be seen by others, that you need to hide yourself? And why is that? Where did that message come from? Who first told you that? And how do we do the challenge? How do we match this challenge, right? How do we maximize what we have without falling prey? How much effort do you put into your beauty regimen? Or do you do nothing at all? Because I think that is also another one of our conversations. If you've just given up and don't try at all because people need to love you for who you are you doing yourself a bit of disservice? Is it important to actually put some effort in? I can tell you a little bit about attraction. I can tell you a little bit about how attraction works. You know, we think that there is one standard of beauty, and there's not. But there are things that are universally considered beautiful. You can look at a beautiful baby, and we all say, oh, it's a beautiful baby. You know, they've done research studies on hip ratio to what is considered beautiful, or the symmetry of facial construction, what is beautiful. Like, there's some standards. But they're all different levels of what we consider beautiful throughout culture and history. But what's interesting is when it comes to attraction, when it comes to something beyond just, oh, I find this person, you know, attractive or beautiful, what brings someone into relationship with us, 55% of what brings someone into relationship with us is how we carry ourselves. So it's not enough to be a 10 or a 9 or an 8 or a 7. It's not enough just to be beautiful. It's how you carry that that really draws someone into relationship with you. And that's the area that we can do the most work on, is how do we carry ourselves in such a way to maximize our level of attraction? Or do you even care? Should we even be worrying about those things? You know, should we ignore the biological or genetic desire to mate and just live without mirrors? I don't know. What do you think? 805-781-3875. Brenda, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I am calling because I just wanted to say that this is such an important subject. My parents were so critical of my appearance growing up, and it has followed me into adulthood and made me feel like I'm so ugly that people just don't like me. And it is so damaging to young people that I am so with the reluctant therapist. We need to address it and make sure our daughters don't feel this way.
So do you have children, Brenda?
I do not.
So what are some things you've done to help kind of overcome the message of your parents, or do you feel like you still struggle with that?
Well, when I speak with young ladies, I tell them, never forget you are so valuable. Do not ever sell yourself short. I definitely try to do the opposite of what my parents did. But I don't know what the answer is for my own personal situation, and it has very much affected me socially.
And I think your story is one that resonates across the board, because, you know, that's the one of the most common things that young women come into therapy for in their teens and early 20s, is this depression and anxiety revolving around a feeling of not measuring up.
Yeah.
And yet we don't really have an answer. And I think that's why I'm posing it, because, you know, for some women, it's getting plastic surgery or spending, you know, hours putting makeup on to try to hide, or, you know, going to boot camps or dieting, that for some women, it's that effort. And then for other people, it's that I'm just going to give up and live my life and, you know, whatever happens.
Right.
And I think the challenge is how do we do the dance? What's the dance?
That's my question. If you get a really great answer, I would love to hear it.
Well, I think we're working towards it, because I have a few ideas, but I'm curious to know what other things have worked for people. But I think one of the starting points is this: what is attraction? And how do we sell who we are? Because you said earlier, you know, I tell young women, don't forget that you're valuable. That's the most important thing. And that is where the attraction starts. Like, beauty is a piece of it. It's how people notice us. But we keep people in our scope by selling who we are from the inside. That's what grows the attraction. The beauty just brings them in, but holding people is really how we carry ourselves, how we stand, how we, you know, sit, how we speak. Those really are the eternal levels of beauty that sustain us.
Yeah, that sounds like a good thing, like you can work on the inside.
Absolutely, and you can always work on the presentation piece. You know, it's interesting, there was a great study done about women in bars. And they had a woman who was considered a 10, and a woman who was considered a 7, and a woman who's considered a 4. And so they were in the bar. And it's interesting, because in social sciences, we actually have these number scales for research. But the woman who was a 10 didn't have a great personality, and, you know, she was kind of sitting there and guys would approach her. The woman who was most successful in the bar was the woman who was a 6 or a 7. She had a great personality. She was confident. She wore clothes that kind of accentuated her good stuff. But mostly she spoke with such confidence because she sold the beauty that she had in such a way that she had much more contact and much more success. So if you're looking from the dating pool piece, that's the research that supports the attraction.
That's really interesting.
Thanks for calling, Brenda, and thank you for
sharing your
story. Jerry, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, I just wanted to say thank you for having this program on, and I just really identify, and I agree with everything that you just said, is that beauty really is an inside job.
Mm-hmm. And are there things that you do to accentuate the beauty you have? Do you self-identify? Do you know your good stuff?
I do know my good stuff, but I have moments to where I buy into the negativity. Like I say, I'm 61 now, and I've dealt with different body issues since I was a young girl. Mm-hmm. And the assets that I felt I did have, you know, with age, I've lost a lot of weight. So now I don't have what I call my best assets. Okay. And, it's just really strange, but it's so uncomfortable, though, when I get back into the old thinking patterns that me that I am made up only of my body is what makes me. I am not my body. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying, right?
Well, that their body is our vehicle that carries our soul.
Right, yeah. But I get irritated with myself because I won't put on a bathing suit and go in front of people. I've carried flat-chestedness with me for a long, long time. And even today, I could say, man, I wish I would have had plastic surgery, you know, even at this age. And what a lot of that is about for me is I would like to have the experience, the actual experience. Mm-hmm. Of, let's say, filling out a bathing suit properly or filling out a dress, you know, for myself. It's just, anyway, I'm just saying that's how I feel.
No, Jerry, I appreciate that.
Yeah. Pardon?
I know, I appreciate that you're honest in that because I think that just, there is this level, the standard of beauty, right? And if you see enough advertisements of women, you know, back in the 50s with the Playtex bras that pointed out, and, you know, there's this push to having the perfect body. And when you see it enough there, and when clothes are made a certain way, we start to feel that unless we're fitting the clothes, somehow we're lacking, instead of the conversations we should be having, which is, how do we get clothes that fit bodies? And I appreciate you also saying that even at 61, those thoughts still creep in. And that's how deep these discontent feelings can go. And I think the trick is, how do we get more time on the positive and less time on the self-talk that drags us down? And I think it's the dance that continues. And I appreciate you calling. I'm sorry,
you know,
Jerry.
It is all about self-talk. You know, that's the bottom line. Is the thoughts that I put in my head are what, you know, creates my feelings about myself.
Absolutely.
And, well, of course, you know, I can't go into all a whole bunch of stuff, but when you gave that of the 10 and the 7 and the 6 and stuff like that, you know, experimenting, I'm not going to go into all this stuff, but I'm just saying this is really a very good program, and it does need to be spoken about a lot more.
Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate you calling in. Beth, you're on the air. What's on your mind? Hi, Beth. Are you still there? Oh, we can come back to Beth. Hi, Michelle. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth. I actually wrote up an email, and then I figured it'd probably just be easier for me to call in. Is it okay if I just kind of read what I wrote?
Sure. Keep it short.
Okay. I'll do my best. All right. So it's related to, starting out just basically, it's no secret that the population just in America, like, most people are overweight, and that's just, like, the norm, and that's the way it is. So with that in mind, I'll say I like the idea. Obviously, I love the idea of people having positive self-esteem, but this episode worries me a bit. Whenever people talk about body image and self-esteem, it seems like it's followed by a "you're beautiful just the way you are" kind of mindset. I'm not against people feeling good about themselves. On the contrary, I think it would be wonderful if more people had a more positive self-image, but I think there's a balance that is lost. Mm-hmm. If I see an overweight person in a swimsuit, I don't think "you gross, they're fat." I think that's really unhealthy, and it makes me feel bad because of their lack of health on the inside, not because of the way they think they're being vainly perceived on the outside. Mm-hmm. I don't want to think that my thought is bad of me to have, but there's so much tiptoeing around people who have low self-esteem related to being overweight, and it seems like people are almost encouraging others to being okay with being overweight, and that's not okay with me because it's not healthy. So I have some more stuff, but that's basically the idea behind it, and I just don't know how to find that balance to have that conversation where obviously you don't want to make people feel bad about themselves, but you want people to be healthy. And so how do you, I don't know of a way that you can talk to people about that at all. I really don't, because it just always ends up being taken personally.
Well, and I think that's why I talked about, you know, wanting to have this conversation about the importance of finding a healthy comfort, right? That we're talking about the tenets of mental health and a strong sense of positivity and a strong sense of self-esteem and body pride is an important piece of it. And if we don't have, you know, a healthy pride in our body, it can be it can be detrimental to our mental health, right? It can be detrimental to our mental health and well-being. And carrying too much weight can be detrimental to our physical health. But I think the danger is that the messages from the diet industry about losing weight are not correct. We're telling people that they need to lose weight to be healthy, and yet 85% of all diet programs fail. People gain the weight back. We don't really understand what it takes fully to help people lose weight enough to be beating on them regularly about being on a diet program or if you're carrying extra weight. And so I'm trying to address this from almost a different approach, that if we can find comfort in our body and we get outside and we can put a bathing suit on and enjoy being by the pool or going for a walk, then the weight loss and health will follow. And I think we spend too much time making people feel like unless you're on a diet and you have lost weight, then you don't deserve to be out in public because, you know, that's unacceptable. And I think that's doing us a huge disservice. And until we can figure out a healthy way for people to diet and keep the weight off, it's unconscionable to have fat shaming in this culture.
Right. And I guess what I'm saying is I don't know how to is the best way to bring it up so that it's not fat shaming, but so that it's just an awareness.
And
maybe that's not even the problem because people are aware of, you know, because their self-esteem is affected by it. So it's not that they're not aware.
Beautifully said, because that's the other point, is that no one is unaware of what their shape is like. So if someone who feels that they can't fill out their bathing suit and feels too thin may be avoiding going to the pool because they feel too thin, just as someone who feels that they're too heavy won't go to the pool. So both people now are missing out on the joys of life that could improve their mental health just because there is this one norm of beauty in our culture.
So there needs to be a separation between, I mean, extracurricular activities and physical health is what it seems like.
I think that we can't have physical health if we only allow or accept or embrace people of one size. Because remember, we're talking about health in a continuum. Someone who carries an extra 20, 30 pounds can have a better blood panel than someone who's considered thin. So to just associate carrying extra weight with health is also very limiting.
Right. And I guess, overweight is just, it's just more common just because of the way things are today.
But is it common because people are lazy, or is it common because our culture is one in which we don't really know how to help people eat well, and so everyone's just kind of winging it and then expecting the diet industry and the medical industry to figure it out?
Right, and I do recall even reading something fairly recently about, you know, the amount of calories somebody consumes per day hasn't even changed that much. It's just that people were more physically active. They did more. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm totally all about finding a way to encourage people to have a more active lifestyle because I'm sure that would help. I feel bad because I don't know. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do about it because I certainly don't want to make people feel bad about it, but I also feel weird ignoring it.
Right. And I think, again, if we find the focus of, and it's something I said earlier, if we help people to utilize their assets, right, if we just focus on someone carrying extra weight, then they never get to utilize those things that are beautiful about them. Maybe they have great hair. Maybe they have wonderfully long legs. Maybe they're, you know, athletic. Maybe they wear dresses well. If we start to learn how to utilize those things that are our assets, and everyone has them, then that sense of self-esteem and feeling of being attraction will give us the confidence to move forward in our lives, and other changes kind of fall into place. But I think the focus on the things that don't go well in our lives is what holds us back. And every single one of us, whether it's a weight issue or acne or our nose or our teeth or our hair, you know, all of us has something that we'd rather have go away. And if we spent more time improving those things that we know are good, the other things would either become less important or would change in some way. And I appreciate, Michelle, you calling and reading your email and sharing your thoughts, because it's the unspoken thoughts and feelings that keep us stuck. And the fact that you're willing to say, hey, I'm concerned for others and I don't know what to do, at least it brings the conversation forward and hopefully some other people will chime in and share their thoughts. I appreciate you calling in. This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. If you'd like to be part of our conversation today, the number is 805-781-3875. I started off talking about what are some things that you avoid in the summer. What do you avoid doing because you don't feel good about yourself? Do you miss out going to the pool with your kids? Do you miss out going to the beach? Do you not go out for a walk? Do you not go out to dinner? You know, what do you not even go on a summer vacation? What are some things that you deny yourself? And the other question is, how much effort do you actually put into maximizing those gifts that you have? Do you know what your assets are? You know, are you utilizing what you've got to raise that level of confidence and body esteem instead of focusing on just the ways that you don't measure up? 805-781-3875. Kathy, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thank you. I kind of segues with what you were just discussing with the previous caller. I have kind of a unique experience in that I just had major surgery 2 weeks ago. I had a total knee replacement. And in the initial recovery session of that, but before I went into the hospital, what I realized was that some people were judging me on the fact that I needed to have that surgery. Mm-hmm. And I'm very, very active. I work out almost every day. I do dance fitness and weightlifting and a lot of stuff, you know, at the fitness center I belong to, and I walk about 4 miles every morning. So I consider myself very fit, and I'm not obese by any means, but I am chubby. And I realized that not my family or my close friends, but people that maybe don't know me intimately, we're assuming that because I do carry, probably 15, 20 extra pounds on my frame, that, first of all, I didn't take care of myself. Second, that led to me not being physically active. And third, there you go, you need a knee replacement surgery. And so it had a very strange effect on me that I wasn't expecting, because I didn't expect to be judged that way, because I really don't think of myself in that way. And like you were talking about, health panels, mine are all really, really wonderful, you know, I'm 63 for my age and everything was fine. But then I was totally blown away by kind of the unspoken but implied sense by some people that, well, of course you need this surgery because you don't take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. And I feel I look very healthy and obviously I'm a robust, strong person. And as part of the recovery, my doctor had recommended that I go into the pool at the fitness center I belong to in a few more weeks when the incision is healed and just start walking, you know, working out in the pool, and which I think is a wonderful idea. But I was initially concerned about, is anyone going to want to see me with this horrible wound in my leg, and it's swollen and it's bruised and it's going to be embarrassing, and that kind of transitioned into, well, maybe I shouldn't go to the pool and be in a bathing suit with my big swollen leg that's purple and has a big incision. And I felt angry and hurt, thinking, why do I even need to worry about this? But it has been an issue that has been implied to me by people. And as you were saying a few minutes ago, really, you know, if you're grossly obese or something, obviously it is a health issue, but there are a lot of people like myself out there who are very, very strong and very, very healthy and very, very fit, but who don't fit the American norm of what that means or how that is defined. And to carry it over into someone who's dealing with surgery, you know, pretty major surgery on top of all that, it's been just kind of an interesting experience for me. The doctor told my husband, you know, when I was coming out of surgery, that they were real impressed with me when they opened up my leg and said, wow, her bones are so strong and powerful and her muscles, except for the knee that was shot for many years. And the doctor even said, it's obvious, you know, that she works out and takes really good care of herself. And it didn't seem to be an issue to him at all that you know, I could be a one size smaller dress size, but it certainly seems to be for other people.
And I think that that's important because again, the standard normal that we're talking about in our culture is unattainable. And I think all of us thinking people understand that, that what we see in the media is unattainable, and that the norm really is, you know, a size 12, and that a normal person's body, you know, is many different shapes and sizes. It's just like our hair. It's like our eye color. It's like our skin. You know, some people would love to be able to put on some extra weight to fill out their clothing. But I think the biggest damage in our culture is that we have bought into this idea that there's one definition of healthy, and that if there are, you know, rolls or wrinkles or extra skin, that somehow that needs to be fixed or we're not healthy. And I think in a lot of ways also that we fall back on this, well, it's just not healthy. I just care because it's not healthy. But it's really not as much about health. I think the health is a piece of it, but a lot of it is what we consider to be visually acceptable. And that's what we get caught up in. And I appreciate you bringing this up, because I think some of the healthiest people carry a little extra weight because they need that extra fat to help our hormones. You know, being too thin and being too fat are both unhealthy. There is that beauty of that middle chair. Thank you so much, Kathy, for calling in, and good healing, happy healing. I hope you're up and around soon. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. 805-781-3875 is a number to be on the air. And Bill, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
I use a wheelchair, and I was wondering, it's getting kind of light in your program now, but how other people in wheelchairs deal with body image and being seen in public. Well, sometimes we don't have a choice, you know. Mm-hmm. Going to the grocery store is, you know, something you have to do.
Well, and how does it impact your day? Do you find yourself avoiding things because...
No, I do whatever I do, and I kind of have the attitude of damn the torpedoes and full speed ahead. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if people stare or ask questions or, you know, look at you funny, you know, it's their problem. But it would be interesting to see if any other people, you know, how the other people deal with it who use wheelchairs.
So did you get a positive message from your family about yourself? Like, what do you attribute to this high self-esteem or this sense of confidence? What do you attribute that to?
I've always been an egotist.
So there is that piece of our temperament that also plays in, that there is temperament that drives our sense of confidence.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Bill. I'll put it out there. What do other people experience? Yes.
Well, one of the things that brought this up is the 25th anniversary of the ADA is coming up. And I would like to, you know, get a dialogue going more with people who are not disabled, and so that they don't feel uncomfortable about talking to us, because that's an issue too. You know, people just are afraid of offending us somehow.
Or maybe there's that judgment also of, you know, you maybe shouldn't be outside and shouldn't be taking up this space. Or I you know, people I think sometimes will say, I couldn't live if I were in a wheelchair, and why do you keep going? And so I think there's a lot of misconceptions that do need to be talked about. I think that was the inspiration for this show is, you know, if we are aware that other people are judging us, then we start changing our behaviors and not living our lives fully just so that other people are not comfortable, you know, so other people don't feel uncomfortable or to not be judged. And I think having these conversations about everything from the ADA to being in wheelchairs to weight, you know, too much or too little, the more we talk to each other and discover each other's humanity, the humanness that drives us, the rest of these physical things become less important, you know, and I think that's what my concern is that the focus is on the physical and not on the humanity behind the person. So thank you, Bill, for calling in, because I'd like to, and we've talked before, I'd like to continue this conversation just on a whole different show. So I hope you'll tune in and call back. Donna, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hi. I just want to wait. I've got you on speaker. There we go. All my life, I've never had problems making friends and getting having men find me attractive. As a matter of fact, my girlfriend and I were at the Elks about a month ago, and I'm 72. I don't know. And there were nobody in there, except for a bunch of older fellers. And I started chatting them up, and we just had a great time, and they bought us drinks. And my girlfriend turned to me and she goes, I'll be dang, you still got game, girl. And of course, in today's parlance, that means you still got it. But, you know, I've always had whatever that thing called it is. And I was always... I don't mean to sound like I'm bragging, because it came so naturally to me to look someone directly in the eye. I expect to be liked. I include them. Life is fun. Life is funny. Let's enjoy it together. I can't explain it any other way. I'm like a size 12 and maybe a 7 or an 8 on your scale. But it's just interesting that I was listening to the older women talk, and you do get a little bit invisible after 60. There's no doubt about it. Men stop looking at you like they did, you know, when you were younger. But it's still, you can still engage people. You can still be engaging. And I still am having fun at my age. And I just wanted to share that if you're so confident about your communication skills, or whatever you call them, you can get out there and do it.
Thank you, Donna. I appreciate that, because the positivity is an important piece of what I talked about earlier. That if I could kind of sum up my feelings today, and please call in, we have a couple more minutes, 805-781-3875. But what I'm kind of feeling today is that the amount of energy that we put on beating on ourselves for the things that we don't feel are positive. Maybe it's carrying extra weight. Maybe it's not enough weight. Maybe it's our skin, our hair, or whatever that is, our height, too short, too tall. We all have some things. We all do. Nobody gets to feel, you know, 100% perfect about everything about their body. It's just the way it goes, right? And even if we feel great and confident about ourselves, we still probably have something we'd want to do differently or have be different about ourselves. Having said that, if we spent less time focusing on the negative things, we could build those natural assets we have to gain more confidence, gain more self-esteem, and that translates into attraction, and we start to attract other people to us. Yes, some people have the temperament of just that kind of personality that draws people to them, and that's a gift. That is a gift unto itself. If you don't have that natural gift, it is something you can develop. We all can develop this level of confidence in ourselves that attracts other people to be near us. And a lot of that attraction is because other people feel like, wow, I wish I felt that good about myself. I wish I could bottle whatever it is you're feeling and feel that way about myself. And the secret is, the most confident people are still faking it a little bit. They're still faking it until they make it, because we all have those things that could slow us down. And so for those of us who are working with young people, raising young people, parents, you know, your opportunity to set the stage for your child's whole life is in how you help them develop their gifts. You know, we all have things we can work on, and that's great, but we also have to develop our gifts, and we have to develop them honestly. You know, it doesn't do our children any good just to be told they're perfect the way they are. That's not helpful, because your child knows the ways that they aren't perfect. And if you tell them that they're perfect in every single way, then they're going to stop trusting you or believing you. So to have those honest conversations, like, you know, you have a great sense of humor, or you tell stories well, or, you know, to encourage those things about us, that if we're athletic or if we're strong, or as shallow as it sounds, if you have great hair, love your great hair. If you have great teeth, love your great teeth. You know, love those things. We all have something. Maybe you have great long legs. Enjoy those great long legs. But to only focus on the things that need to change, then we give in to the cultural message. That's when we lose. That's when the diet industry of 180 billion, and that's when the beauty industry of 108 billion, that's when they win. That's when the marketing wizards and the psychologists that have been advertising stuff that we don't need win. You know, there is a dance that we do, because this desire to be attractive, this desire to be beautiful, lives inside of us. But once we start buying into the fantasy that we will achieve some ideal, we've lost ourselves. And how boring is a culture that everyone looks the same in? Our job as individuals is to learn to love the beauty and differences in all those around us. Because it's easy to love people who are beautiful. It's easy to love someone with a great personality. It's easy to love someone who has a great temperament. The challenge in life is to learn to love others that may not be acting or behaving or looking precisely the way you feel they should. The real gift in loving another person is loving them for all their flaws. And that's our challenge, to see people beyond their imperfections and to love those things below that. And that we as individuals, our job is to bring out those highest skills we have, to utilize our assets, because it really is not enough to say the world should just love me as I am, because that's really not going to happen, honestly. So one last call. Jeremy, what's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to say thank you for bringing up the basically celebrate diversity and appreciate diversity. Mm-hmm. I think that should be, you know, more of a focus instead of being grateful for the differences, I guess.
Yes.
But I was not sure if you had touched on, I did have to step away for a second, about the challenges of social media must be exacerbating this problem. Mm-hmm. You know, the fear of cyberbullying or a picture ending up on Facebook or something like that. So I would imagine that it's a whole new world in fighting the body image.
It's a huge issue. Instagram, anything that includes a photo, right?
Right.
That can really do great damage to self-esteem. And the magazines that, you know, that are all photoshopped and continue to press this message really make it difficult to fight the battle, that dance between a healthy, attractive look and trying to reach something unattainable. Do you as a man feel that pressure?
Oh, absolutely. Sure I do. I especially as a man who had a metabolism that was off the charts his entire life until the last couple of years, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's been a recent thing for me.
And to be able to look around and maybe embrace that you're part of a new, you know, stage in your life instead of feeling like you have to continually fit into the 30-something body size.
Well, again, though, men, you know, we do have it easier because now the dad body has become popular. So, you know, we get it easier on that end as well. I'm ashamed to admit that.
Jeremy, I love you for saying that. That's a great way to end it today. Thank you for calling in, because beauty is a social construct. It is not a one size definition. Our culture determines what we decide is beautiful. And if we continue to buy in as a culture that the media's push of beauty is the only normal, we're hurting ourselves and our children. But if we can embrace the dad body with all the love we've got, then we can embrace all bodies with all the love we've got. And don't think that people don't know those things that aren't their best assets. Love them for all the things that are their great assets, and that will help them love themselves. And then things may change or they may not. But we all deserve to utilize our assets to our best abilities and to go out and enjoy some summer. Allow yourself to put on the suit. Go out and be part of the community, because if we hide ourselves, we're just buying into this message that's not helping anyone. And thank you for being a part of this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. Find me on my Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. I tweet now at EBTRT. And we'll be back next week to continue the conversation. Until then, a little Eddie Cochran to, jazz up your summer spirit. Thanks for being a part of the conversation. I'm gonna raise a holler about a working all summer just to try to earn a dollar. Every time I call my baby, try to get a date, my boss says, "No dice, son, you gotta work late." Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime blues. My mom and papa told me, son, you gotta make some money. Now, if you wanna use a car to go a ride next Sunday. Oh, well, I didn't go to work, told the boss I was sick. Now you can't use a car cause you didn't work a lick. Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime blues. Take 2 weeks, don't I ever find vacation.
gonna take my problem to the United Nations. Well, I called my congressman and he said, "Whoa,
I'd love to help you, son, but you're too young to vote."
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime blues.